CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Colonel Jeff McCausland, United States Army retired CBS News. He is the CEO of Diamond Six Leadership and Strategy. He is also a visiting professor, international security at Dickinson College. We turn to what we know about the phone call between the president of the United States and the president of the Russian Federation these hours past, and what we don't know, far more compelling. CNN headline, Biden says U.S. troops in Ukraine are off the table, but promises withering sanctions if Russia invades. Colonel, a very good evening to you. Thank you for this. The U.S. forces off the table. Why I find that significant to start is that Ukraine is in a unique position given its history and integral success of both Russia, then the Soviet Union, and Russia again, except for these last 7 years. Ukraine is a standalone, not in EU, not in NATO, and to my general knowledge, with the exception you will mention, in no treaty arrangement with anybody to come to its defense. It's isolated. It's an orphan. Is that significant in this standoff of no troops? Good evening to you, Colonel.
Well, John, good evening to you. And it is, of course, significant because the penultimate requirement would be Article 5 of the NATO treaty extended to NATO members, whereby an attack on one is an attack on all. That certainly does not apply with Ukraine, a non-member. Now, Ukraine is part of the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, which all European countries are part of, which talks about prevention of escalation and violence on the continent, respect for sovereignty, et cetera. They are also the signatory to a couple of arms control treaties that may apply. One was the old CFE treaty on conventional forces and a thing called the Vienna document, which does authorize the observation of military forces conducting exercises. Russia and the United States also signatories. And that could be applied here. Finally, the Ukrainians are signatories to the so-called Budapest Accords and the aftermath of the end of the Soviet Union, now about 30 years ago, which we'll celebrate here in a few weeks. The Ukrainians, who had nuclear weapons on their territory, as did Kazakhstan, those countries under that agreement transferred those weapons to Russia. So all Soviet nuclear weaponry went to Russia, renounced their willingness to get nuclear weapons in future, and in return, quote unquote, their sovereignty was then guaranteed by the other signatories, one of whom was the Russian Federation. Now, clearly, the Russians have not respected that with the 2014 invasion of Crimea and their ongoing support for rebels in the eastern portion of the Ukraine. But those are the only, if you will, John, legal agreements that seem to, from the past, apply, as Mr. Putin continues to argue, for legal guarantees that someday Ukraine might not become a member of NATO.
The presentation and the phone call, the readouts, emphasize the two positions. Mr. Putin made a case that Russia is the victim, that NATO is the aggressor, that Russia seeks stability, that Russia seeks the Minsk Accords, reestablishing the independence of Donbass, perhaps as a way of talking about changing the leadership in Kiev. All of those things are presented as Russia is trying to secure what has been discomfited by NATO's actions these last years. The U.S. position is that you will not invade. And if you do, this is going to happen. First, we'll start with the U.S. position. Is that persuasive, the sanctions that Mr. Biden and his allies can wield in the event of an invasion?
Well, it remains to be seen, quite clearly, John, whether that's persuasive or not. We did not see an immediate withdrawal of Russian forces in the last 24 hours. But I think from all reports, Mr. Biden was very clear about the consequences militarily, politically, and economically. And what are those? Well, the most thing we've talked about is economic, which would be increased sanctions, far more severe than they witnessed in 2014, perhaps focused on freezing the assets of oligarchs who are key to Mr. Putin's position in power, perhaps even removing Russia from the international banking agreement called SWIFT, which makes it then impossible for them to denominate rubles into dollars and other financial transactions. The end of the Nord Stream pipeline, which is an economic bonanza for the Russians, about to go into place to ship natural gas from Russia to Central Europe, Germany, and elsewhere. Militarily, Mr. Biden did take off the table sending U.S. forces to Ukraine, a non-NATO member. But what he and his national security advisor reiterated it pretty clearly in the aftermath. If your concern, Mr. Putin, is more Russian or more NATO forces, I should say, and more U.S. forces on the borders of Russia, invading Ukraine will bring that to reality, because you can expect more NATO forces and potentially more U.S. forces in places like Latvia, Lithuania, Estonia, Poland, Bulgaria, and Romania, all of whom are, in fact, NATO members. Foreign Minister of Latvia has actually requested U.S. forces be positioned on the territory of his country. And finally, of course, politically and diplomatically, if you want to be a pariah in the world, want to be isolated politically in the world, Mr. Putin, this is the quickest path to get there, by invading the Ukraine, and then you become a pariah, kind of like North Korea, for the first time, in a large way at least, one country changing the geography of the map through military means since the Second World War.
Our colleague in Moscow, Felix Lai, reports to me that the Russian television audience and the newspapers in Moscow do not indicate preparation for war. The public is not being told that we're jumping off tonight, or that there's fear in the land, or that NATO is coming. Far from it, it's Christmas time. Does that bear significance, Jeff, from your experience in the past about how bad actors behave, to avoid telling the public, or do they prepare the public for some kind of, I don't know what you'd say, drumbeat?
I think more some preparation will occur, and that would be an indicator as we're getting close to the date they're going to actually invade. We know they only have about 75,000 or so forces positioned on the border, a significant force, but some intel estimates have said they would want to have 175,000 troops positioned there, because they would want this attack to go swiftly with overwhelming force. They would also want to wait a little longer until the ground freezes in that area where their heavy armored formations can move along. So I think we'll see that drumbeat increasing as time goes on. Right now, you're right. Even in the international press, the Russians have claimed that Western comments about an impending Russian invasion are, in fact, hysteria. But Putin also knows, to some degree, an invasion might well be popular amongst the Russian population. Some 80% of the population were in favor of the invasion of Crimea back in 2014. Dissidents like Navalny, who's now in prison, actually supported the invasion of Crimea, along the argument, the populist argument that Putin made, that the Ukrainians and Russians are one people, and this actually is Russian territory. So it might not require all that much ginning up of the population to support this. And furthermore, it might distract them from problems at home with the economy and with the raging COVID crisis, which is ongoing in Russia right now.
Jeff, how do you see this right now? Why are those troops deployed? To get a conversation with the president? Was that enough of a payoff for the Kremlin?
I don't think it was enough of a payoff, John, but I think, you know, Winston Churchill once said, the Russians don't want war, but they want the fruits of war. And that's exactly what Mr. Putin is trying to do. I think we need to back off and understand this is part of a continuous, ongoing conflict that you could argue began about 2005, when Vladimir Putin wrote, you know, that the demise of the Soviet Union was the greatest catastrophe of the 20th century. In 2008, he invades Georgia and takes two provinces. In 2014, he invades Crimea. Along the way, of course, there are cyber attacks against Western industries, interference in Western elections, including our own. There's the killing of Russian dissidents living in Great Britain using nerve gas. And now this intimidation on the border of Ukraine. If anyone believes that Mr. Lukashenko, independent of discussion with the Russians, you know, contrived this crisis of migrants along the border between Belarus and Poland without Putin being involved, they are being very foolish. So this is one other campaign in that conflict to recreate that Soviet Union, or at least Russia having a sphere of influence over those countries that were part of the Soviet Union.
Just 30 seconds, Jeff. Are you encouraged that the president's consultation with our allies found what we're told was unanimity, that Europe is not dissenting at this point about the confrontation?
Absolutely. That is key. The degree to which Mr. Biden can make this a international versus Russia crisis as opposed to a bilateral crisis, I think enhances the deterrent capability at hand. It'll be critical, particularly for the Europeans to stand up because of the financial sanctions and because of the criticality of Nord Stream. If Nord Stream is shut down, then we're going to see natural gas prices go pretty high in Central Europe right as winter is beginning.
Colonel Jeff McCausland, United States Army retired, CBS News, Dickinson College, the CEO of Diamond Six Leadership and Strategy. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.